what I want to do is just give a slight overview of the program to help set the stage for what we're doing here. And I picked this picture to start off with no words, because this is actually the way you find most of our students most of the time when they're not in the classroom. And it's engaged with people in the business community, entrepreneurs, business leaders, having a good time. And it's this energy and excitement that really sort of keeps the program moving forward. Technically, we have a mission and a vision statement and a value statement, educating men and women to create economic value through new technologies. We are serious about that. We work very hard to do that. And in the end, this is what we really are. We're a collection of really great classes with fantastic faculty and very, very bright, dedicated, motivated students from across the UCSB campus. This year, over 425 UCSB students took TMP classes. Over half of those came from science and engineering, the rest from across the rest of the campus. A third of those students, almost a third of those students, are graduate students. We have more extracurricular business educational experiences than many leading business schools, this being one of the activities. We have a lecture series where we bring in leaders from around the world to come and talk to our students. We have what we call EATS, Entrepreneur at the Table, where we bring executives and entrepreneurs to come and meet with students in small social settings so they can have frank discussions about their ideas and their careers. And all these things are integrated together. There's nothing done by accident. It's integrated together to prepare students to assume careers in creating value. We have in our design put the students at the center. We have academic faculty like myself, PhDs in business, and we have practitioners in business teaching and working with our students to provide not only theory-based but practically-based education. This is a quick demonstration of the growth and demand for our classes, our program. These are students, these are faculty. Everybody's smiling. You don't always see faculty smiling, so I want to, you know, keep this picture out. This year, we really launched our eco-entrepreneurship program jointly with the Bren School of Environmental Studies, and one of the teams that's part of that program will be presenting today, Greenpeaces. And we hope that that will help provide a lot of new solutions to a lot of the world's problems. And our companies, our students, not only get an education, but many of them actually go out and launch companies. And some of the students that have launched the companies are in this room today. I want to thank our individual supporters. These are individuals who have made this program possible. The program exists because, well, quite frankly, like a lot of you in this room, you give of your time. Some of you have given financially. Some of you meet with our students and advise them. But it's a community effort. It's a dedicated campus effort, and it makes it possible for this organization, for this program to go forward and excel. So thanks to our student teams, our mentors and advisors, and to all those who attend here today. Thank particularly these three organizations, MK Capital, Shepard Mullins, which is a local and actually regional national law firm, and then Dow Chemical, which has provided the support for one of our awards today. This is our 9th annual competition. It's open to UCSB students from across the campus. They don't have to take our classes. But if you're going to be in this competition, you have to essentially go through our mentoring process so that we can make sure that you are not just a random development, but we are actually working dedicatedly to provide the learning opportunities for you. We have majors from across the campus, typically working in multidisciplinary teams. And this gives a schedule of sort of the events that we have organized with, again, dozens and dozens of business leaders from the community. So we have a night about marketing, a night on finance, a legal night. Again, providing almost one-on-one or one expert with a group setting to provide the education and the insight that's needed to succeed. And this is a list of the mentors and supporters who have contributed to this event today. These are our judges today. We're very honored by an outstanding panel of judges. Before I go into the introduction, let me say that we started off with over 125 students that divided themselves into 25 teams. That was back in January. And rather than have someone like myself, an academic or some particular on-campus participant help limit and screen students, we use the marketplace. So we ask the students to submit an executive summary, and then we give all the executive summaries that are submitted to the Tech Coast Angels and ask them to screen those executive summaries and help us select which should be the teams to make it to our semifinal. Our semifinal event, which is held in a large room where students can set up individual booths and meet with investors, we have 30 local investors who come on campus and they invest TMP for $10, but they spend 2 to 3 hours that evening walking around and talking to each of the student teams. They make the choice by how they choose to invest their imaginary TMP dollars, and that's how we got to the final six teams today. And now we have 4 judges, 3 venture capitalists and 1 serial entrepreneur. Jim Andelman, general partner of Rincon Ventures. Jeff Lee, associate at Mission Ventures. Gary Wilcox, serial entrepreneur, also happens to be a UCSB alum, and actually a former faculty member at UCLA. And Marianne Wu, a partner with More David Dow Ventures. Our judges are sitting up front, and if you could please give them a warm welcome for spending the afternoon with us. We are most honored by your presence, and I think our teams are most intimidated by it. They look forward to the engagement. Our prize categories, the most fundable idea is $10,000. Dow's best use of a new material, $5,000. Best business plan is $4,000. Best pitch is $4,000. And yes, you get to pick a winner. The audience choice is a $2,000 award.
Well, as usual, Gary's far too kind. I'm hardly a keynote speaker. I'm the warm-up act before the main event starts. And fortunately for you guys, I realize that, so I'm going to be very brief. I'm very excited to talk to you about the TMP because I've seen how it can change students' lives. I've seen students that have come into the program with an idle curiosity about business, maybe some vague idea about, I might be interesting to learn a little bit more about this, but with the full intention of graduating and going into their field of study. And I've seen them come out of the program with a wild-eyed interest in starting their own businesses and going to small companies and sort of ditching this idea they had at the beginning of kind of following a more traditional path. And for me as an entrepreneur, that's very exciting. So what I'm going to do today is quite frankly, I'm just going to give a shameless plug for the technology management program. Now, some of you who know me, you know I'm never the smartest person in the room, and I know I'm not the smartest person in this room because I know some of you folks, and you're a lot smarter than I am. I like to break things down in the most elemental way, so please indulge me as I break down the technology management program for you. We all know that UCSB has great technology. We've had it for decade after decade. We have far more Nobel laureates than we really have any claim to for a university of this size. So technology's been solid for many years. What's been missing are the management skills and the management practices and expertise to take that raw technology, take those research projects, and create commercialized products that ultimately make their way into the marketplace and create wealth. So Gary and his team have created a program. So those of you that are following along, it's a technology management program. They've created a program to bring technology and these management principles together. And Gary shared with us some of the specifics of that program, including a chance to talk to entrepreneurs, some of the basic tools that you would expect any business person to have. These are all insights to these students that come to us from a technology background. Now, I know that we're in a university and this is a very politically correct environment, so I hesitate to say this, but those of you who do know me know that if there's a line to cross, I will cross it. And I'm about to cross it here, so hopefully I won't offend anyone too much with the word reality. We bring a heavy dose of reality into these students' lives. Many of these students come to us and they've come from a science background, they've come from physics or some other background where there is a right and a wrong answer. And all they have to do is study hard enough or go to office hours and bug the professor enough or get on the internet and Google enough, and they'll find the answer because there is an answer out there. It's on page 262 of a book, and they just need to find it. And what we teach them, and one of the things we teach them in the TMP, and I think it's one of the most important things, is in business, there often is no right or wrong. I think one of the reasons why I've had modest success in business is I don't have to find the right answer. It's all shades of gray, and I just have to do my best and guess. And we all know that when events are swirling around you and you know, you're in the middle of the day-to-day, it's often difficult to know what the right decision is. So we give the students the courage and the confidence to make hard decisions without a whole lot of data. And this is something they're often not comfortable with at first because they're used to having the binary answer, you know, what is right, what is wrong. Can we guarantee that if you get a TMP certificate that you will be successful in business? Of course we can't. There's no program, there's no credible program that's going to guarantee you that. But what we do, what we do is we increase the odds of success. We increase the probability of success for our students. So think about it. Think about someone that goes into a casino and has never been inside a casino before. They've never played any of the games. And they wander in and they walk up to the roulette table and they play a little bit and they lose a little bit of money and they're really not sure even why. And then they go over to the blackjack table and play a little bit and they win a little bit and once again not really sure why. And then they play craps and a few other games with the same experience. They walk out of that casino, chances are they're going to walk out with less money than they walked in. Right? The odds are stacked in favor of the house. We all understand that. What we do in the TMP program, we tell the students, go right to the blackjack table. Okay? Don't play the slots. Don't play roulette. Don't play craps. Go to the blackjack table because that's the best odds in the entire house. And once you get to that blackjack table, we want you to count the cards. We want you to count the face cards. We want you to count the aces. We want you to have an advantage over the other people that are sitting there at the table with you. And we want to get you as close to break even with the house odds as we can. So at a very elemental level, we are helping the students count the cards on the road to wealth creation. So this is the audience participation part of my very short talk. I want you guys to tell me who these gentlemen are. I know you guys know. Shout it out. I heard a name. Who else? These people will be embarrassed if I have to tell them that you didn't know. There's Dave Hofstetter, and who's the other gentleman on the right? Yulin. Right. You guys get an A. Klaus Schauser in the upper left. Klaus founded Expert City, later purchased by Citrix, one of the largest employers in Santa Barbara County after the government and after this university. Yulin Wong founded Computer Motion, was purchased by Intuitive Surgical. Intuitive built a public company based on computer motions technology that's now worth between $10 and $11 billion. And Dave Hofstetter, he built CallWave, which was one of the last initial public offerings here in Santa Barbara. So these gentlemen have three things in common. In addition to having the misfortune of working with me collectively for about a 14-year period, they also have a close affiliation with this university. So Klaus Schauser was a tenured professor in the computer science department before he decided to go out and be an entrepreneur and start Expert City. Yulin Wong came here as an undergraduate, went all the way through, got his PhD in robotics before he started his company. And Dave Hofstetter, as well, earned his undergraduate degree here at UCSB. So I told you they had three things in common. They worked with me. They had affiliated with the university. The third thing these gentlemen have in common, none of them had the benefit of the technology management program. It simply didn't exist when they were involved with the university. Despite that fact, I think we all know these gentlemen and their teams and the companies they helped found have been very, very successful. I think quite conservatively, you could say that these companies have generated over $500 million of wealth. If you look at the wealth that was created after Expert City and Computer Motion were purchased, it's billions of dollars. Now, I would put these executives up against anyone else in the world. Right at this point in their careers, they're world-class executives. Silicon Valley, New York, LA, they can stand toe-to-toe with anyone. But I worked with these folks when they were right out of the university. And I could tell you, and I think if they were standing here on the stage, they would agree, they could have benefited greatly from the TMP. Because they need, in addition to having to stay at the top of their game from a technology standpoint and create these companies in these emerging industries, at the same time, they had to learn, what is it that a venture capitalist really wants to hear in an investor pitch? How do I write that offer letter to recruit that key member of my core team? What is the right price for my product? They had to figure out all of these elemental things that we impart on the students within the technology management program while they were keeping the technology moving forward and while they were building their own companies. I'm going to play a game while the students are up here. giving their presentations. I invite you to play this game with me while you're in the audience. As you're listening to the pitches, as you're assessing the veracity of the various business plans that you're hearing, I want to see if you can identify the next Yulin, the next Klaus Schauser, and the next Dave Hofstetter. Because I guarantee you, they'll be on this stage tonight, just as they're in my classroom quarter after quarter. The difference between these students that you're going to see tonight and those senior executives I just showed you is that these students will have a significant advantage. They're going to have the TMP in their back pocket. It's going to allow them to hit the ground running. It's going to put wind behind their backs. And it's going to allow them to create wealth for themselves, for their families, and for our community much more quickly. And I look forward to coming back in a couple years and putting specific faces where these question marks are today and sharing their stories and their experiences of going through the TMP program with you. So let's let the games begin. This is where you clap.
So, hi. Thank you for coming. I'm David Preko, and I'm presenting our business, Nitride Solutions, on behalf of the rest of our team. Our company, Nitride Solutions, will manufacture the world's highest quality aluminum nitride substrates. These will be used for the manufacturing of high efficiency and long life ultraviolet LEDs. Now, when you're making a semiconductor, you start with a substrate. It's a base layer, a foundation on which you fabricate your device. In the case of LEDs, it's a 2-inch crystal wafer. We actually grow the crystal in a reactor from raw inputs, slice it, polish it, and sell it to device manufacturers that fabricate devices on it. Each one of these substrates gets used to produce about 5,000 devices, or 5,000 LEDs. The end-use applications for these ultraviolet LEDs are across the board. Primarily, they're in germicidal sterilization and industrial manufacturing. These compact, high-efficiency, low-power, long-lifetime LEDs would be replacing expensive, fragile, and toxic mercury vapor lamps. Also, in many of these cases, the use of UV light replaces previous methods for these applications that involved many toxic chemicals. So the problem is, as you see on this graph, that LEDs are very efficient in the blue range, around 400 to 450 nanometers. White LEDs will replace all the lighting in this room in 10 to 15 years. White LEDs are the most efficient lights in the world. What happens, though, is that the efficiency drops off when you go into the UV range, where that red line is. This happens because you have to switch material systems from indium gallium nitride to aluminum nitride. Until now, nobody has been able to grow high-quality single-crystal aluminum nitride substrates. The result is that current efficiency on UV LEDs is around 1%, and current lifetimes are around 1,000 hours. Other substrates, sapphire, silicon carbide, gallium nitride, are just not suited to ultraviolet devices. These technologies have been in development for 10 to 15 years and haven't been able to produce high-quality devices. We've developed a unique process technology here at UCSB that allows us to grow these substrates for high-quality ultraviolet LEDs. Our substrates will vastly increase the efficiency and lifetime of these devices, making them useful for all the applications we just talked about. So, our competitive advantage is the high-quality substrates grown by our process. This top graph shows in blue the ultraviolet transmission of one of our substrates compared to competitors. More transmission means more light passes through the device and it's more efficient. Underneath, these are X-ray rocking curves. And without getting too technical, one narrow smooth peak is good. That's us on top. It indicates fewer defects in the crystal, higher quality, once again, higher efficiency. So we're not the first company that's ever tried to do this, but the other companies that have been funded in this space over the last 10 years haven't been able to show high-quality volume production. The problem is that they're locked into using different older growth methods for the crystal that haven't been able to produce high-transmission, low-defect substrates. The thing to keep in mind is simply that this crystal is very difficult to grow, and this is the first time it will be truly feasible to create commercial-quality substrates of aluminum nitride. So our technology was developed in Professor Shuji Nakamura's nitride crystal growth laboratory here at UCSB. Shuji Nakamura actually invented the first blue LED in 1993 and is credited with having created this whole multi-billion dollar industry. We hold key trade secrets that our engineer Troy has developed in the lab. That top picture is one of the reactors we've been growing on. Additionally, we are licensing key patents from UCSB and have already reached clear terms with the Technology Transfer Office for that. So the market for aluminum nitride substrates is projected to follow the rest of the optoelectronic device industry as lighting moves to solid state. By 2013, this will be a $300 million market growing at 33% a year. And this is a sub-market of the $7 billion nitride device market. This data is from Strategies Unlimited, which is the leading market research firm in this space. We've built a really solid management team. Our CEO, Bruce Allen, has experience founding a high-tech materials company. He has a background in JPL and has worked closely with NASA and other government agencies. Troy Baker, our lead engineer, has worked for 6 years under Professor Nakamura developing this technology. He has co-authored patents and worked extensively on reactor design for this process. Muriel Taylor has 20 years of executive and financial experience and truly understands the process of growing a company. Myself, I'm graduating with a business economics degree with honors here at UCSB, and I have previous experience founding and managing an art licensing company. And our chief technical advisor, Dr. David Boer, has written over 200 papers and 60 patents in the area of nitride semiconductors and LEDs, and was in charge of reactor design at LumaLEDs, the largest LED manufacturer in the world, and chief scientist at BridgeLux, a specialty LED manufacturer. Our business model is very direct. We grow the crystal, we cut it into wafers, and we sell the wafers direct to device manufacturers. Our plan is to build out our facility, order our equipment, and optimize our first production line. This line will produce 1,000 wafers each year. These wafers sell for $6,500, and that price data is from our market research as well as from competitor pricing. These wafers cost us about $600 each to make. We've calculated our cost of goods from the real costs we've seen growing this in the lab, so we expect margins to consistently be above 80%. We also expect to see some efficiency gains each year as we hone our process and some price decline as the market matures. Our plan is to ramp up production as the industry expands to 24 reactors over 5 years with over $100 million in revenue. Our sales and marketing will be direct, as is standard in this industry. We've spoken to a number of customers, and they have clearly said that substrate quality is a key pain point for them, and that higher quality substrates would allow them to make much higher quality devices, and that they are simply always looking for better substrates. There's also a very high demand from these substrates from the military, and we expect to be able to contract with DARPA, DOD, and other government agencies, and our CEO, Bruce Allen, has extensive experience working with these sorts of government contracts. Over time, we would expand to selling in additional markets, such as UV laser and electronic device manufacturers, as well as diversify our product line with semipolar and nonpolar substrates. We've already begun the process of finding a 3,000 square foot facility in Goleta and preparing the permitting applications, and we're working with equipment manufacturers right now to plan this custom equipment that would be ideal for our process. The next step will be to build our facility, procure our equipment, and then work to refine our process. We expect to reach commercial production within 18 months, and we've built that time into all of our models. After that, it's just a question of expanding to meet market demand. So we're seeking a $5 million investment, and that would go towards initial capital equipment, facility build out, and the time to get our product ready for the market. From that point, our high margins will allow us to fund our growth internally. Our long-term strategy depends on how the industry grows. We could vertically integrate, branch out into other materials, or likely be acquired as the industry consolidates. Once again, just to summarize, we're using a low-cost, protected method to create a highly valuable product that solves a key customer pain point in a new and rapidly growing industry. I'm David Preko for Nitride Solutions. Thank you so much for coming, and special thanks to the Technology Management Program here at UCSB.
I'll ask the first question. A very nice presentation, very exciting opportunity for you. I'm wondering on the intellectual property front, if you could maybe just talk a little bit about your strategy, since so much of what will protect you from all the other people that might want to do similar things will have to be in the IP area, and especially if you have areas other than just keeping trade secrets.
Yeah. Well, there's two patents regarding this growth process that have been developed in the Nitride Crystal Growth Laboratory that we're going to be licensing from UCSB. Now, these are non-exclusive licenses for these patents, and they cover key parts of the process of growing in these reactors, but our engineer, Troy, has been developing this technology for 6 years and knows basically all the special methods for growing this. Other companies have been trying to grow this material for a very long time and have not succeeded. It's extremely difficult. We think that the combination of our patents and our trade secrets is going to allow us to maintain a competitive advantage in this field.
Great. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your pricing model. So I think you had said that you wanted the cost of these, cost of production was around $600, and that you were going to sell for $6,500 a wafer, which was based on market comps. And how do you think price elasticity looks in this marketplace? So you started with a bunch of applications, and so is this an entry market that has a very high price point today that we would expect that as you lower the cost of the wafers, you could get much bigger market expansion? And can you talk about that?
You know, it's hard to say because it's an emerging market. What's been projected is that as these materials become available, there's going to be huge uptake from device manufacturers. So we're using price data that was laid out in this extensive market research we have. If you see on top of our financials, we have this revenue per wafer that we've pulled out of that. Because one substrate gets used to make 5,000 devices, it represents around a little below 10% of the cost of the device, and by device I mean ultraviolet LED. So it's going to enable such higher quality end applications that we think these prices should hold. And also, this price model doesn't take into account what kind of premiums we'll be able to charge by having such high quality substrates. We didn't want to make any numbers up in our models, but we could likely charge actually a premium on top of this.
And then just quickly, how much does an aluminum gallium,
gallium nitride substrates, indium gallium nitride.
Indium gallium nitride, and what?
Our lead engineer, Troy, would be able to answer that more accurately than I would, but I think those are selling for around 5,000 or 4,000.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very nice delivery. One of your slides showing your solution showed 10 to 50% efficiency, and that seems like quite a large range. Can you sort of share more about that with us, exactly what that number means and why the range is so high and what will determine whether it's 10 or 50?
Well, what causes these gains in efficiency is the transmission of the material. So basically, when the LED is creating light, because the substrate, the materials made in the LED aren't absorbing the light and it's not bouncing around inside, it all exits. So that's what causes the change. And that's just because no one has ever grown this at this kind of thickness before. So it's hard to know exactly how much better it will be. But simply having better transmission, lower defects will allow more light to exit the device, have it not bouncing around inside, and cause just huge gains in efficiency.
Follow-up question, I guess, that might relate to that, because what volumes have you produced already in the lab, and what level of assurance do you have that you can translate lab production to commercial volume production?
Well, that's a serious issue, but that's also what makes it such an opportunity. In the lab, we've grown thin aluminum nitride substrates. Right now in the laboratory at UCSB, we don't have the proper type of reactor to grow thick boules. Our reactor design is really a key part of our IP. It's very difficult to grow this. You can't do it on a standard reactor. So we've been able to grow thin. I mean, that's where we got the data for this top chart. And we've proven all the individual pieces in the lab of being able to grow thick with high transmission or low defect density. But we need to be able to build our own reactor and our own facility to actually do it.
Thank you. Very nice presentation. Can you talk a little bit along those lines about kind of what kind of yield you're getting now? My understanding, at least based on what you're presenting, is that the efficiency is a performance factor, whereas I'm curious about the actual yield that you get out of the wafers right now.
You mean the production yield I'm not really sure. I know that we've used the kind of yields that we've seen in the laboratory to build our models as far as how much production we can expect from each reactor line.
And do you have any sense of what the competition's yield is?
Well, the competition can't actually produce high-quality aluminum nitride substrates at all at this point.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I'm done.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mark Arnold, and I am co-founder of Quantaic Corporation, and I am honored to be here today. I'd like to give special thanks to the Technology Management Program and everybody that has put in so much hard work to make this event here today possible. I'd also like to thank the judging panel and everybody in the audience for being here today and allowing me to give this conversation to you today. I want to talk to you today about a company called Quantaic Corporation, a new technology that we've developed, and what possibilities this means for the future. Now, what is the one most important element that we need for survival on this planet? Water. And furthermore, why are some of the most brilliant economic and financial minds today publicly stating that the most expensive natural resource in the future is going to be clean water? Well, let's examine this claim by what we already know today. What we know is that 1 in 5 people on this planet do not have access to clean drinking water. We know that the world's water crisis is one of the largest public health issues of our time. Water-related illnesses are the third leading cause of death worldwide. Of the billion people that do not have access to clean drinking water, more than half of them are located on or near the coast. Now, for me, it's hard to visualize a billion people, so I like to bring it right here to California, because this is what we're all familiar with. And for this, I quote Dr. Bob Wilkinson, UCSB Bryn School professor and water policy expert. And he says, every single water supply system in California is overallocated. My friends, we are running out of water. We're running out of places to take it from. And the inevitable future of water supply is taking it from the ocean. Now, how is this need being addressed today in the market? Well, there are two commercially important technologies that science has brought to us in the last 100 years. Multi-stage flash, which uses a large amount of energy consumption, and reverse osmosis, which also uses a large amount. Now, the World Bank says today the commercial market for desalination is $200 billion, and by the year 2021 will be over $1 trillion in size. This year alone, desalination will produce over 2 trillion gallons a day of fresh water. In the year 2015, desalination will produce over 40 trillion gallons of water a day. The current technologies that are commercially available are not affordable for most regions of the world, and this is largely due to the high energy consumption used by these technologies. And this brings me to Quantaic's value proposition. Quantaic Corporation has developed a technology and built a working prototype of a system that produces fresh water from ocean water at an affordable price and is 3 times as energy efficient as the leading technology in the commercial market today. Now, how does the Q-cell technology stand up to the reverse osmosis technology? Well, our system is a low-pressure system. Reverse osmosis uses 60 times the amount of pressure to push the water into the system. The other interesting thing that we found is when we put 10 gallons of ocean water into our system, we produced 8 gallons of pure water. Reverse osmosis, when you put 10 gallons of water into that system, you only get 1 gallon of pure water. Now, the result also of this high pressure is a lot of maintenance, because as you can imagine, 1,200 pounds of pressure per square inch pushing water into a system can cause these spiral-wound membranes to break often. If we look at the specific energy consumption of a plant that would produce 1 million gallons of fresh water from ocean water every day, the Quantaic Q-cell technology would only require $2.5 million a year. That same plant that would produce 1 million gallons of fresh water from ocean water a day using reverse osmosis technology requires $7.5 million. This is Quantaic's competitive advantage. Now, clearly, ocean water has lots of total dissolved solids. And in order to purify this water to World Health Organization standards for purity, we have to be able to eliminate heavy metals, pathogens, prescription medications that have found their way back into community water supplies, salts and arsenic, parasites, and bacteria and germs. Quantaic also has developed an entire system to use this technology. The Q2000 concrete pod pad produces 2,000 gallons an hour of fresh water from ocean water. It has a long usable lifetime. It is designed to be robust, survive natural disaster, and produce fresh water from ocean water for years. This system is also scalable from 50,000 gallons a day of fresh water from ocean water to hundreds of millions of gallons a day of fresh water from ocean water. Now, it's important to think about Quantaic and the progress that we have made to date. Incorporated in 2006, we filed an initial patent on the Q-cell technology. This month, a letter of approval was received on this patent. As I am having this conversation with you all today, a number of other very important patents are being filed. We subsequently raised $500,000 from friends and family, and this enabled us to develop and build a number of working prototypes. The latest, which was built in December of 2007, tested at production-ready standards, and we believe it is ready to go into the pilot feasibility stage. We have also started to establish customer relations, because we understand that partnerships with companies in this industry is an extremely important part of how we enter this marketplace. Now, who's done what's been accomplished so far? Alistair Patterson, president of Quantaic Corporation, has over 20 years of executive and administrative experience. Joel Miller, chief technologist and inventor of the Q-cell technology, has over 30 years of experience in engineering, consulting, and management. Patrick Lewis, a mechanical software systems engineer, has worked with Joel Miller in previous ventures and has designed the software system that is used to test the Q-cell technology. Israel Miller is Joel Miller's son and apprentice and is a very talented young engineer. Myself, I have 4 years of experience in business development and administration, and also have experience in customer relations and marketing. Now let's think about California. There's a huge policy push for desalination at a large scale in California today. There are 20 plants that are proposed to be built that will pump more than 1 million gallons a day of fresh water from the ocean. If all of these plants are built, this will represent a 100-fold increase over the cumulative installed capacity that exists in California today, and will supply 7% of California's future urban water use. Now, the majority of these plants are still in very early stages of development, and this presents an opportunity for Quantaic. There is a paradigm shift in the way that we are viewing our oceans. We understand that we can no longer afford to take water from the ocean, take water from our rivers, lakes, streams, and groundwater. There is no choice but to start taking it from the ocean. Quantaic believes that we can acquire 5% of the United States membrane technology market by the year 2013. For the next stage of development, we are requesting $5 million in funding in order to build a pilot feasibility plant and to test the Q-cell membrane technology 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And we believe, after withstanding this test, we will be positioned very well to be a success for investors, stakeholders, and employees. If we look at some of the recent acquisitions that have occurred in the last several years, Quantaic firmly believes that, principally, we must build a profitable business and the exit takes care of itself. But I like to look at the three acquisitions that have occurred, and they are not limited to these three, but they are very large in size. And as I turn this conversation over to you, I'd like to close on the reason Quantaic was founded. Quantaic Corporation was founded on the new technology to be able to provide fresh water where it is not currently available. But more importantly, it is about saving lives. Because Quantaic Corporation realizes if we have the ability to produce fresh drinking water from ocean water at an affordable price, we can perhaps help to change and maybe even save the lives of over 1 billion people. And this is the reason I believe Quantaic Corporation at least deserves a place in your mind when you leave this room today. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Very nice presentation on a clearly very important problem.
Thank you.
So kind of two questions, but very tightly commingled. One, I didn't quite understand what the product was. And so is this a new filter that would go in existing RO systems? Is this a whole new system? And to the extent it's the second, can you talk a little bit at the most high level about how it works? And then second, can you talk about the scale of the prototype?
Yes, that's a very good question, and I'm actually very glad you brought that up. Our system that we have built, the prototype we have developed, is a modular cartridge. And these modular cartridges, 700 of them, go into the Q2000. So it has modular product assemblies, so that way these units can be quickly manufactured, assembled, and distributed into the marketplace. The scalability of this technology is based on the mechanical software system and the testing of the Q-cell technology that we have done. We believe that when we use these cartridges and test them at a large scale, that it will prove to take advantage of economies of scale and be even better than what we're expecting so far.
And, do you talk about scale?
Have you received any third-party independent validation of the performance of the prototype?
Yes.
Can you describe that, who did it, what the process was, what the results were?
Yes, I do need to be careful because, as I mentioned right now, as I'm having this conversation, there are some very important patents being filed. So for this venue, the details of how the technology works, I cannot disclose. But we have received third-party validation from a third-party engineering firm. And in fact, the third-party engineering firm that we needed to use actually does consulting work for NASA.
Very nice presentation as well. Can you talk a little bit about where you expect the bulk of your market demand or the part of the market you would enter? Would that be California first, or would it be Africa or Asia, or what parts and why you think those are the right appropriate markets for you to go after?
Well, I personally like to believe that California, because we are here and the company is founded in San Ramon, I like to think that California, because there's a large push for desalination, and there's a lot of funds already allocated to build these large-scale projects, I think it provides the most attractive market opportunity. However, there are regions in the world that need this technology at a very large scale, and I am not opposed to international sales. However, I think the most logical, as far as building relationships and what is most practical for people that we can talk to and establish relationships and have partnerships with, I think those opportunities exist initially here in California.
And can you also talk a little bit about what portion of the market, in particular the desalinization market that you mentioned earlier, actually would Quantaic would actually play in? Because I assume that $200 billion market involves a lot of other things besides just the actual plant and technology piece.
Absolutely. And I think the technology does have legs. And the financial projections that I displayed to you today was strictly the membrane desalination technology market in the United States, which is only $2 billion in size.
Thanks.
Oh, very nice presentation.
Thank you.
I'm particularly pleased to see you thinking about how you're going to help a lot of people and save a lot of lives, and when that happens, the profits will follow.
Right.
Very important, though, to that is the quality of the water that you produce. And you emphasized a lot being able to produce it for less money using less water, and I think that's very important. But maybe you could talk just a little bit about why you think the quality of the water that you will produce is going to be able to meet the standards, which every day seem to get tougher and tougher.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up, actually. When we tested our prototype, the water that came out on the other side as clean water came out as a starved solution. And so it was actually very interesting because a starved solution, whenever you put it in whatever container, it attacks the container. And so when we put it in the plastic bottle, it came out of the system and into the plastic bottle, it actually tasted like plastic bottle. And we also tested the water to see what the amount of total dissolved solids were. So the total dissolved solids, the TDS of the water going into the system was 32,000 parts per million, and coming out was less than 500.
500
parts per million.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Corey Frankel. I'm a founder of MySolar. I'd like to take the time to introduce you to our team. Again, this is Alex Wallish, Karen Christofferson, Seamus Lovelace, and Jay Goodwin. Let's tell you a little bit about our company and what we do. MySolar is a service-based company that markets, sells, customizes, installs, and maintains residential solar systems. MySolar will be the easiest solution for customers to go solar. So what exactly is so hard about going solar? Well, if you wanted to go solar, who would you call? Where would you go? This is exactly the question that's facing many of our potential customers. Now, when we ask that question, we want you to know what the answer is, and the answer is MySolar. In order to achieve this, we have an active sales force with an aggressive marketing strategy so that we can accurately position ourselves as the premier provider of solar services, as that easiest solution for customers to go solar. Now, our customers also face a lot of confusion. Confusion over what their electricity needs are, what the best technologies are available to meet those needs, and how best to finance these technologies. Well, at MySolar, we're here to help. We provide full consultations and customization so we can let our customers know and educate them on exactly what their energy needs are, exactly what the best technologies are to meet those needs, and what the most affordable financing options are. Now, here's the biggest problem. I like to take a moment to emphasize this because this is really what MySolar does best. Our customers are looking for the best technologies at the most affordable prices. Now, in order to do this now, you'd have to talk to 3 to 5 different sales representatives who are only representing their company's products. Well, at MySolar, we provide technologies from all of these manufacturers at the most competitive prices and with only one point of contact, our MySolar sales force. We're just trying to keep it simple. Now, we're also trying to keep it simple for our manufacturers. The biggest problem facing our manufacturers are inefficiencies in vertical integration. Our manufacturers' core competencies are in research and developing these technologies, whereas MySolar's core competencies are in sales and marketing. Now, we feel that this will be the ideal partnership because our manufacturers can really benefit on our strengths in order to compensate for their weaknesses. They can concentrate on the technologies, and we'll concentrate on the sales. Another big problem facing our manufacturers are their dependency on proactive customers. Now, these are those customers who would go above and beyond to actively seek them out and find them. This really limits their customer base because they're waiting for these customers to go above and beyond. They're waiting for them to find them. Well, MySolar, we're the proactive ones. We go above and beyond to bring our manufacturers new customer bases who wouldn't have found them otherwise. Another problem facing our manufacturers is that they operate in a crowded marketplace. In other words, with so many competitors offering similar products, our manufacturers often find it difficult to differentiate themselves from their competitors. Well, we can help by selling their products through MySolar. This will increase their brand exposure dramatically and help them to stand out in a crowded marketplace. Now, MySolar does have some competition. Initially, the same manufacturers who we'll partner with will be considered our competitors. They are trying to set up their own sales and marketing divisions. However, we feel that by presenting MySolar to them and working out strategic partnerships, they'll soon become partners rather than competitors, and they'll find that it's much easier to do business through MySolar than to try and set up their own sales and marketing departments themselves. Now, we also face competition from other distributors, and these are companies like REC Solar. The biggest problem with that is that they do have passive sales forces. Like our manufacturers, they are dependent on the proactive customer, and like we said, our aggressive sales force cuts out the need for proactive customers. We'll be bringing new customer bases to our manufacturers. Our last phase of competition comes from local contractors. And why their competition is that they're working on private homes, and very often some of their people who contract them will want to put solar systems in their houses, and they'll be the ones to go out and install those. Well, they can only pull from a very limited amount of products. And what we would really like, ideally, to happen is to make these local contractors our partners so that when they are asked to do solar installations, they'll outsource it to us rather than try and do it themselves. So how will MySolar achieve this? Through, again, our active sales force and aggressive marketing strategy. Initially, our sales force will come from the mortgage industry. And we did this for three reasons. First of all, these people are already well entrenched in the communities. They already have networks set up, pipelines, and they're well known. Second of all, they're very well versed in personal finances, which will come in very handy when helping to finance these projects. And third of all, with the market being the way it is, we know they're looking for jobs. Now, we really feel that we'll be able to have our sales force leverage their existing connections so that they can take their mortgage customers and convert them into MySolar customers. Again, these salespeople will be the single point of contact for the customer. So rather than having to deal with several different sales representatives, they only deal with their one sales force, or MySolar sales representative. We also have a two-phase marketing strategy to help differentiate ourselves from our competition. Now, the first stage is corporate promotions. This is the umbrella marketing for all of MySolar. Now, the purpose of this is to brand MySolar as that premier solar services provider and the easiest solution for customers to go solar. As Howard Wenger, Senior VP of SunPower, will tell you, there just isn't a brand, a name brand in solar right now. The other stage of our promotion strategy is Salesforce promotions. Now, part of this is branding the individual salesperson. Since we are using mortgage brokers who are used to being branded on their own, we'll really be able to promote them as members of the community and really trusted advisors rather than just some salesmen. Now, much of this will be done in the local communities around our corporate headquarters in Los Angeles and our satellite branches in San Diego and Santa Barbara. But why Southern California? Well, we feel that Southern California is the ideal place to launch MySolar because of the California Solar Initiative, which offers 20 to 30% rebates on all solar products, as well as the fact that California represents 58% of the U.S. market for solar, and it has some of the highest sun exposure levels in the United States. Now, to tell you a little bit more about our company, I'd like to introduce another one of our founders, Alex Walsh.
Thank you, Corey. So, how do we make money? MySolar's revenue comes from the sale of solar systems. Here's an example of the revenue from the sale of a single solar system. Now, Given how each project will vary in size and manufacturer, we have chosen to use this number as an estimate for the average American household, this number being $65,000. Now, to break that down for you, $45,000 of that is the cost of materials. These are the materials that we purchase from the manufacturer, including the solar panels, the power inverter, and other things like tracking systems. So that leaves my solar with a gross profit of $20,000 and a gross margin of 30%. So where does our gross profit go to? It goes into our salaries, including those of our installation teams, our executives, and our sales representatives. Then it also goes into marketing and facilities. So how does this pan out over the next 5 years? Well, in our first year, we're not going to be focused on making sales, but more so we're going to be focused on training our sales representatives and also our installation teams. At the end of year one, we project we'll have a net negative income of $900,000. The breakdown for that, it's mostly going to be salaries and marketing expenses. In year two, we're going to hit the market. We're going to get out on the streets and start selling these solar systems, and we project that we'll make 80 sales. Now, even though we'll still have a net negative income, at the end of year two, we'll be a lot closer to breaking even. We project that we will break even in the beginning of year three. Once we break even, we're going to continue to expand our sales force and hire more installation teams so that we can cover more territory and also keep up with the growing demand. By the end of year five, we project that we will have a net income of $3 million. So what do we need to get this venture started? We need $1.3 million in funding. This will cover our cash until break even in the beginning of year three, and the majority of the expenses that this funding will go towards will include salaries, marketing, and facilities. The great thing about our business is we don't carry an inventory, and we don't have a lot of long-term assets that tie up our funding. So where do we see MySolar in the future? Well, we want to expand into other states. We also want to be ready for new technologies. Thin film photovoltaics is on the cusp of fundamentally changing the solar industry, and we're going to be there ready to market and sell these technologies when they're ready to go out. We also want to form strategic partnerships with housing developments to build solar communities from the ground up. On top of that, we want to incorporate other alternative energy technologies into our business. So, with that in mind, MySolar is going to be the easiest way for you to go solar, and we look forward to bringing you there with us. Thank you.
Can you talk about your market entry strategy, given that you don't, that you are a startup and don't have any installation history? If I were buying resident, looking for an installer for solar for my house, you know, an obvious question would be, how many of these have you done before?
Right. So we would be having contracts with installation teams that have already been working, and we would hire them to join our team.
That's also what a majority of the first year would be spent on, training the installation teams to be able to install systems from many different manufacturers.
Also, on top of that, some of the distributors won't distribute to you unless you have installation teams or installers that have 3 to 5 years of experience in the field. So we would be hiring people that are already installing solar systems.
Again, that's the full year of recruiting and hiring and training.
And what's the motivation for them to join MySolar instead of keep doing what they're doing if they're already installers?
The motivation, I think, would be that we would be getting more business than they would be on their own.
They also get to play a larger role rather than being a pawn in a small in a larger company. They get to really play an active role in building MySolar, and we really feel that by capitalizing on that kind of entrepreneur spirit, in a lot of the people who we'll be hiring, will really be able to excel MySolar.
A question about your sales strategy. A very nice presentation, by the way. So it seems like a big part of your customer acquisition strategy focuses around hiring real estate people that already have some relationships into those markets, as that seems like one of your strong competitive advantages going forward relative to the manufacturers. How do you prevent those guys from eventually leaving, or rather, you know, demanding higher salaries, as it seems like they provide a lot of the value for the company?
Well, that's a big part of our first year startup costs, is salary for these mortgage brokers who we're recruiting. We're also retraining them, and they're not even making any sales, so we'll be paying them very high salaries. It's actually our main expense in the first few years. So we hope that will help us in not having to constantly lose personnel and rehire people and retrain.
Yeah, also on top of that, our sales reps, like you said, are the highest paid employees in the beginning, and also they do get commission on the sales of the solar systems.
I think we can all attest up here at least to exactly how difficult it is to set up a company like this, and we really feel that, you know, we'll be able to bring in these salespeople who, again, get to take an active role in building the company, and we feel that they'd be a little bit less inclined to go out and try and set everything up on their own.
Thank you. Oh, very nice presentation.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a question that relates to branding, and it seems like you've already got a great start. You've got a nice logo there. You're over the sun, and the easiest solution for customers to go solar. I think that's a great start. Establishing a brand can be a real challenge, and I'm wondering how much you've had an opportunity to think that through and how you might establish that brand, how much it might cost you, how much time it might take.
Right. A lot of that also comes with experience. I have considerable background in marketing, so I definitely know exactly what it takes to go into. And that's why we've actually apportioned a lot of the money that we're getting from our initial venture rounds, as well as apportioning a lot of our profits to marketing and branding. We do understand it's going to be very costly, especially if we want to, you know, make ourselves the premier name in solar. We're really going to have to be out there in major ways. If you would like, we have comprehensive broken out exactly, you know, what stage we're going to be going into what and how much that's going to cost. We can't send that to you.
Also, I just like to add on to that, that this is a big hole in the market. If you need a DVD player, you know, you're going to go to Best Buy. If you need a solar system, it doesn't really roll off the tongue the same way. It's been a big problem for a lot of companies. And so we see that's a big part of our business is branding ourselves in the first year and getting to the top of that customer positioning, the top of their mindset.
And that also plays into why we've adopted the business model that we have and why we're really trying to capitalize on branding the individual salespeople rather than just branding the company, because now it kind of takes it to a different realm. The customer isn't just sitting there seeing, you know, a MySolar commercial on TV or hearing a MySolar ad on the radio. They're meeting someone face-to-face who is a representative of MySolar. If I were a salesperson, I wouldn't be just a MySolar salesperson. I'd be Corey Frankel of MySolar. And by taking it to the level where they're more of a trusted advisor and a close networked friend within the community, we really feel that it'll take us from just another company and just another name to something that's part of the household.
Just to reinstate what we were talking about with the gap in the market about there being no premier solar service provider, I had the opportunity to speak with Howard Wenger, and he is the VP, Vice President of Business Units for SunPower, and they're, you know, producing some of the most efficient solar panels at this moment. And he mentioned that there is no brand name in solar, and I told him, you know, that's kind of interesting if you guys are so great. And the majority of people can't pull your name straight from their head. So.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, nice presentation. And I agree with you, I think there is a gap. I think you're talking about residential installs and there's absolutely a brand name gap there. One of the things that you mentioned in your presentation was that the average cost for, you know, the average house in the US to install was $65,000. So that's a pretty big check that has to be written. And so can you talk a little bit about customer segmentation and your dependence on subsidies and policies and how the current situation and climate affects the business?
That's a good question. Well, like we mentioned, there's the California Solar Initiative that does provide 20 to 30% in rebates on the solar system. Customers, we are dependent on that. If you look at the market, there has been a huge increase in solar sales just because of that. There's also a $2,000 federal income tax rebate if you install a solar system in your house. And then also we're going to form strategic partnerships with home equity loan banks so that we can help them find a way to finance this solar system. And there are also, like New Resource Bank, this place that helps you finance a solar system so that it pretty much costs the same as your electricity bill, except your electricity bill is going to keep going up.
And to put in a little bit of perspective for you,
the way that the market is projected to increase and the way that the cost of electricity are projected to increase, the average American household today over the next 30 years will pay about $175,000 in electricity bills. You compare this to, let's say, a solar system that costs $65,000, in the long run, it really pays off.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I am Sherry Robert, and I, along with my colleagues, Alex Williams, Drew Evans, and Ashwin Sampath, will be presenting InfloMed, a company that provides streamlined adverse drug event prevention software to hospitals. Our passion for creating InfloMed comes from a personal tragedy, the death of my best friend, Jeff Jackson. In 1999, Jeff was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver, and in 2000 had a third of his liver removed. In early 2005, Jeff had a bad accident that shattered his leg and dislocated his ACL. The prescription medications he was taking for his liver and his leg were harmfully interacting, causing him to internally bleed, eventually killing him. Jeff's doctors did the best they could with the technology available to them, but their inability to catch this harmful drug interaction cost my best friend his life. Sadly, Jeff's story is not unique. Adverse drug events are one of the leading causes of death in the United States. An estimated 1.5 million adverse drug events occur each year. In 2007, an estimated 180,000 people died of adverse drug events, more than two times the number of people that die from breast cancer and automobile accidents combined. Medication-related errors are the number one contributor to these deaths, and amount to $3.5 billion a year in extra medical costs to the U.S. healthcare system. Currently, no streamlined point-of-care solution exists. What the healthcare industry needs is an efficient and timely tool to reduce ADEs. Point-of-care is when a physician is caring for or treating a patient. Currently, in order for a physician to check for a harmful drug interaction, they must resort to searching through a medical book or searching the internet. In the hospital setting, time is money, and with physicians under pressure to see between 15 to 40 patients a day, the additional step of checking for an interaction doesn't always happen. A common complaint is that the current software gives excessive alerts, causing the physician to become desensitized and potentially bypass severe or lethal interactions. Hospital administrators and physicians have all said that they would pay more for a customizable alert system that physicians use at point of care. With this in mind, we have created a tool that checks for harmful drug interactions while seamlessly integrating into the physician's prescribing routine. InfloMed's solution to the ADE problem is ADE Aware, medical software that aids physicians by thoroughly checking prescriptions for potential harmful drug interactions at point of care before medications are sent to pharmacies. Modern point-of-care medical settings utilize electronic medical records, EMR, and electronic prescribing, e-prescribing. The EMR is an electronic file of patient-specific medical data. E-prescribing is the use of computer technology to generate prescriptions directly to the pharmacy rather than writing it on paper. By utilizing information from the EMR and the technology of e-prescribing, ADE Aware eliminates additional steps of checking for an interaction. The federal government has mandated nationwide use of EMRs by 2014. Currently, 760 or 10% of U.S. hospitals use EMR, and it's doubling every year. As hospitals convert to EMR systems, an immense new market for medical IT will emerge. The snapshot you are seeing is a picture of an EMR. At the bottom left of the EMR, the physician adds the new drugs they are prescribing. After they hit the prescribe button, ADE Aware searches for harmful interactions between the newly prescribed drugs and the patient's medical history in the EMR. This snapshot shows what a physician sees if a potential interaction is found, a description of the interaction, severity, onset, and result. ADE Aware will check for interactions between prescriptions, herbals, vitamins, over-the-counter meds, and food. analyze the patient's EMR, and warn physicians if the patient is allergic to a drug, if the drug would be contraindicated in the patient due to age, pregnancy, or certain health problems. Due to the complexity of the market and the variability of customers, we have unique value propositions for each customer. Physicians value it because their time is more efficiently used because no additional steps are needed to obtain interaction information. Their medical malpractice liability is reduced, and it helps to safeguard patient health. Hospital administrators value it because it maximizes workflow efficiency, reduces potential patient stay, and is cost-effective. IT departments value it because it requires no additional hardware, is automatically updated via the internet, and provides a new and valuable service to physicians. The annual cost attributable to ADEs for a 700-bed hospital is $5.6 million a year. This number includes the cost of a patient staying in a hospital bed for extra days due to complications from an ADE. Each ADE extends the patient stay 5 days and costs the hospital $6,000 or $1,200 a day. Hospitals are paying over $50,000 for their current drug interaction checking software that are only a Band-Aid for the ADE problem. With regard to competitors, there are two distinctions: direct competitors and potential partners. Direct include iScribe, Epocrates, and Soapware. iScribe and Soapware are e-prescribing tools. Our most direct competitor is Epocrates. Their drug interaction checking software is used by more than 500,000 healthcare professionals. The three key differences between our product and theirs are the ability to integrate with EMR and e-prescribing systems, the ability for physicians to set their own customizable alert levels, and the ability to deliver up-to-date information using software as a service model. Potential partners include Micro, Medics, and LexiComp, companies that provide standalone database checking software to hospitals. Inflomed is the only company that combines all ADE prevention components. To obtain the drug interaction information, we will combine multiple credible and certified databases into one comprehensive database. We are currently developing patents for this unique database and copyrights for the software. We have defined a targeted market entry that is as follows. The UCSF School of Pharmacy has expressed interest in clinical trials for our product and has experience with studies of drug interaction databases. To establish distribution channels, we will license our product to EMR providers and to integrated data networks, IDNs. Licensing to EMR providers will enable us to utilize their distribution channels and get us in as many hospitals as possible, facilitating timely integration into the hospital's existing system. We will also sell to IDNs such as Kaiser and Sutter, group purchasing organizations that manage multiple healthcare facilities with one governing board. This will allow multiple unit sales rather than selling to individual hospitals, lowering cost and widening distribution. Further development will lead us to the HMO market. 2009 is our development and clinical trials year, and we have a projected expenses of $900,000. We expect to be profitable by 2010 with an EBIT of $9 million. By 2013, we expect to capture 10% market share of total U.S. hospitals. At an average price of $100,000 per hospital, our projected EBIT is $62 million. We have compiled an advisory board of some of the top experts in the field. From our medical board, Candy Tesornis is the Associate Director of Clinical Pharmacology at UCSF. She is excited about our product and will be critical in instituting clinical trials. From our business board, Doug Sweet is a marketing expert with over 30 years in the medical field. He will be instrumental in bringing our product to market. Currently, we are seeking $900,000 of seed investment to get us to our next milestones. We will further our product development, bring on an experienced management team, and institute clinical trials. This will take us to our next round of funding in which the product will go to market. Further funding will come from bootstrapping in the form of founder investments, investments of friends and family, and technology grants. We fully desire to bring on an experienced management team with prior success in the medical field. We will identify and obtain these people in early 2009. With their help, we will take the developed product through clinical tests and with further funding, put our product to market by 2010. In conclusion, adverse drug events are a nationally identified problem in need of a solution. InfloMed's integrated and automatic software helps physicians to safeguard patient health by stopping harmful interactions, saving the healthcare system both time and money. With InfloMed software, physicians will be better informed to more safely and accurately prescribe medication. By helping to stop a lethal drug interaction before it starts, your investment can help save lives. Thank you.
Very nice presentation. It seems, certainly, I think we can understand the value of the product that you provide. It seems that it really comes from the integration of EMR with e-prescription. Can you talk a little bit about the penetration in the market of e-prescribing currently and how that relates to either hospitals as well as private practice?
Currently, there are quite a few tools out there which help in e-prescribing. The one that we are aware of is eClinical Works and Allscripts. And Allscripts is one of the biggest leaders in the e-prescribing market. The thing is, right now, their drug interaction checking is something which is done as a matter of fact and not which is a dedicated solution. So we are trying to bring out a product which directly attacks that problem.
Well, very nice presentation. I have two questions. One, could you tell me a little bit about what those clinical trials will look like and how much they might cost and how long they might take?
Part of the clinical trials will be having the physicians actually utilize our software and being able to record how many times they use it and then being able to show exactly what the number of adverse drug events were prior to them using the software and then being able to compare it to the number of adverse drug events that occur post using the software.
Okay. And then do you have to get any type of regulatory approvals in order to market your product?
I'll take that one. The current standard for healthcare IT is certification through the Department of Health and Human Services. The branch called the Certification Committee of Healthcare Information Technology deals with certification and checks healthcare IT for three factors: functionality, how well the product works, security, how well you're able to contain patient data or be hacked into, and interoperability, the ability to tie into existing systems. Certification ensures that healthcare professionals can use the healthcare IT on a daily basis to improve daily work, and certified healthcare IT products are reduce the risk of healthcare IT investments by the hospitals and help advance the national healthcare IT agenda.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It seems like one of the important things here is that there's the trend towards EMR and e-prescriptions and that you can leverage that. Can you talk a little bit more about how your product ties into those existing products and if there are standard interfaces and how that would work?
Right. So basically, all the EMR companies right now are supposed to implement the HL7 standard to interface with other EMR systems as well as other tools which will operate with these EMR systems. So we are trying to take advantage of those standards through which we can query these EMR systems for the medication list for a particular patient. Apart from that, there are also a few other interfaces such as the CDA and the CCR which are defined, but we don't see that to be too useful to us.
And are those standard, what you talked about standard interfaces, are those implemented today or are they mandated in some time frame?
Currently, a few of the EMR companies already implemented, but not all of them, but they are mandated to implement it within a certain point of time.
And when is that time?
Approximately around 2010 is what we see.
Yeah. To augment that, there's a national healthcare network movement through the government, trying to make all hospitals EMR compliant by 2014.
You mentioned in your points of differentiation against the competition a more comprehensive data set that included prescribed medicines, herbals, and over-the-counter. Can you talk about where you get that data and how you keep it maintained and how you keep it differentiated?
I'll start with that one. Our uniqueness is going to be combining multiple certified databases and the algorithm that will check the overall database that we create. Currently, on the competitive analysis slide, companies such as LexiComp and Micromedics provide databases to physicians that are accessible to them, but it's an additional step. It's something outside of their normal routine. We will take these databases, which are just the purchasable information, integrate them into one cohesive database with herbals, vitamins, drug-to-drug, and have the algorithm that checks that own unique database, and we will use their information that gets updated to update our own databases.
There are multiple companies which actually provide these databases. First Data Bank and Cerner Multum are some of these companies which have these databases, and right now they are the kind of proven products out there in the industry. So we're going to use that to come up with our own unique database.
And have you already initiated licensing discussions or?
Not at this point in time.
I have talked to First Data Bank, and they're more than willing to license databases. It's just a matter of having the funding to pay for them.
Okay. Even for resale?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Johnny Riskus, and to my left we have Daniel Howard and William Kuo. I'm here today to introduce Icing Solutions. Icing Solutions was conceived based on a need that we saw for more convenient ice and heat therapy products. 1 in 4 people will injure their knee at least once in their lifetime. Doctors recommend that people with new knee injuries ice 15 minutes, 3 times a day, for 4 to 6 weeks. However, most people don't ice as recommended because current methods are cumbersome and tend to render the user immobile. It's also often difficult to find proper icing applications away from the home and when on the go. Here you can see a picture of Daniel icing as in the traditional way with a bag of ice. Daniel looks sad because he wishes he had a more convenient way to ice. Well, cheer up, Daniel, because we've got a solution for you. What I have here is a single-use instant cold compress that's attachable to any knee brace. It's very similar to this cold compress, which is in the market today, except ours has silicone on one side, which makes it more comfortable and aids in heat transfer. It also has Velcro on the other side, which allows it to attach to any knee brace. Now, this one is just a prototype, so it's not filled with chemicals. But if it was, what you would do is simply twist it, which pops a water bladder that's on the inside. This creates an endothermic reaction, and our cold compress begins getting cold instantly. Oh. Thanks. Once this is activated, simply attach to the knee brace as follows. As you can see, our product is flexible and will conform to the shape of the knee just like the knee brace would. So once you've attached it, simply put on your knee brace like you normally do, and you're ready to go. This is great because it allows you to ice anytime and anywhere. Initially, we plan to target people who buy knee braces and ice regularly. Later, we plan to expand to other joint injuries and to heat compresses. But for right now, we specifically are talking about cold compresses for the knee. So what we need to do is get our products to the places where people shop for cold compresses. You know, these places include sporting goods stores, athletic trainers, and physical therapists' office. Pharmacies and sporting goods stores sell 700,000 knee braces every month for new injuries. In a survey we conducted, 92% of patients said they failed to ice as recommended. When asked why, the number one reason was inconvenience. This means that every month there are 645,000 new patients with knee injuries and braces that don't ice as recommended due to inconvenience. Icing Solutions cold compresses will be the most convenient and effective form of compresses on the market today. Don Amson, physical therapist of 30 years, believes, and I quote, "Icing Solutions portability will increase patient adherence to cryotherapy recommendations. For this reason, we predict that our product will greatly decrease the number of undertreated knee injuries per month." We know that marketing is crucial to the success of this venture. This is because there's no technology gap for our product, and we know the market exists. All we need to do is prove that we can successfully market and distribute our product. So to do this, we've come up with a multi-pronged marketing strategy. What we want to do is provide incentive programs for distributors and their sales representatives. We also want to make strategic alliances with brace companies. This allows us to do two things. One is put our products into current braces, and two, we want to be able to package a brace with our products so that people that don't have one can use one. We also have an online marketing campaign. What we're doing is driving traffic to our website using cost per action marketing strategy. We also plan to go into the community and simply go to AYSO, youth soccer, company sporting events, and simply distribute our product that way. You know, in order to do this, we want to recruit a marketing professional, somebody that's been there, has started products before, and knows what hurdles we're up against. Using this strategy, we believe we can quickly and efficiently introduce our products into the market. Now here's Daniel to talk about the business model and pricing.
Thanks, Johnny. All right. We have manufacturing, packaging, and shipping quotes for each step of our business model. There is a Chinese manufacturer that will be producing our compresses and shipping them to a packaging facility in California. At the packaging facility, the compresses will be filled with ammonium nitrate and water, then put in bigger boxes and shipped to our fulfillment site. From our fulfillment site, we will ship orders to distributors. We can get Icing Solutions products freight on board at distributors' warehouses for 34.5 cents per compress. If we sell our compresses to distributors for $1.13, and they take a 30% markup, and then retailers take a 70% markup, our products will cost $2.50 each in stores. Using this pricing model, our profit margin is 70%. We also plan to have a website for online bulk orders. By restricting our online sales to bulk orders, we ensure that online sales do not conflict with retail sales. Here's a competitive landscape of Icing Solutions products and its competitors. As you can see, some of our competitors are as effective as us, yet they are nowhere near as convenient. Our products will supplement these products, addressing the need for the 645,000 knee injuries that go undertreated every month simply for reasons of inconvenience. Our competitive advantage revolves around convenience, thermal range, and pressure distribution. By attaching our compress to a support aid, the compress is held in place, allowing the user to be completely mobile. Our compresses do not form any condensation, allowing the user to ice anytime, anywhere, and in any attire. By attaching our compress to a support aid, the support aid insulates our compress. As you can see, our compresses and our competitors' compresses both start at 49 degrees, yet other compresses absorb heat from the surrounding environment and only get warmer. They actually warm to 60 degrees after only 8 minutes, which is not a therapeutic healing temperature. Our products, which are insulated and where the cold is trapped in, actually cool to 43 degrees after the first 8 minutes and stay below 47 degrees for the recommended 15-minute icing period. Because our compresses use joint-specific designs, they conform very well to the body part that is being iced. This allows the brace to evenly distribute the pressure, increasing the transfer of heat and decreasing inflammation. Now, the chemical reactions of our products are not patentable, which is great, because we will not be infringing on any patents by entering the market. However, we can protect our intellectual property. We have worked with a patent attorney to prepare a provisional utility patent. Our claims revolve around the methods of attachment and performance characteristics, including joint application, thermal range, and pressure distribution. When it comes to startup costs, we only need $34,500 to get our first 100,000 compresses in the hands of distributors. However, because marketing and entering the market quickly is imperative to the success of this venture, we plan to take on $1 million in our first round of funding. After our products prove to be successful in the first year, we plan on raising another $4 million to introduce new product lines, such as compresses for elbows, shoulders, ankles, and wrists, increase our marketing expenditure, and enter our secondary markets. Our secondary markets include doctors and surgeons' offices, hospitals and clinics, elderly homes, and the military. We have a balanced and diverse team. We also plan on recruiting a marketing and distribution expert to ensure that our products enter the market quickly and efficiently. I believe that our complementary skill sets, strong work ethics, and great communication skills will make this venture a success. Thank you so much for coming today, and we would like to answer any questions at this time.
Well, very nice presentation. I just hope I don't have to use any of your products, but it's very exciting what you're
preventative maintenance.
Thank you. Thank you. Could you maybe talk a little bit about the criteria you might use in hiring your marketing person? Because I think you've absolutely identified something that's very, very important, and that person's going to make or break things in the early years. So what's the ideal person look like?
We want to look for someone with experience in the medical industry, someone who's worked with pharmaceutical companies that distribute to pharmacies and sporting goods stores. Now, some sporting goods stores and pharmacies, the big chain ones, are their own distributors. So we'll have to find people that know the different distribution channels and how we can get our products in our target markets initially.
The other question I have is, have you had any conversations with people that make the knee braces and things to get their feedback to you on how they might like your product and incorporate it into theirs?
Have we talked with people who make the knee braces?
Yeah, as an example.
Oh, yes. That is to come.
Okay.
Because we are preparing our provisional utility patent, which is going to protect our intellectual property, we do not want to disclose our agreement to anyone without securing the patent. Once the patent is secured, then we will go and start talking. However, we have talked with the Monster Energy Drink sports manager, who is a friend of one of ours, and he says he's excited to get his athletes using our products because they injure themselves a lot, and in their busy lives, they don't ice as recommended.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Looks like a great product that unfortunately we could use in our house. You talked about getting distribution possibly through the brace companies, and it seems like you haven't talked to them yet because it is premature. But can you talk a little bit about who those companies are and who your targets would be to be working with in terms of getting distribution through them? And then can you also talk a little bit about, well, answer that first and I'll have a follow-up.
Initially, the people that we're talking to are people like Ace and companies such as BD. BD currently makes similar products, such as like Dr. Schultz footwear kind of things and other medical devices. But they don't currently have like a knee brace or make a cold compress. So what we want to do is kind of use someone like them that's very closely related to these fields, but hasn't branched into this market specifically.
Yeah.
Another thing we can do is, once we secure our intellectual property, we can go to companies that make instant cold compresses, and if they think their sales will increase by using our technology, that's another outlet, whether we license the technology, whether we manufacture for them, whether it's an acquisition. You know, there's a big market for ice therapy products. So it's going to be picking out the companies that we think our products will complement, and in that case, we can provide promotional samples in their brace packages. So someone who might not buy a package of our compresses will get to use it for free, see how convenient and effective it is, and be more likely to purchase it in the future.
Great. And then my second question was related to pricing. And so you had great data in terms of how you set your manufacturing costs or how you got your manufacturing costs. How did you decide what your price point should be in the market and then how you split up that margin with distribution and retail?
Great question. Currently, you can buy instant cold compresses from anywhere from $1.50 to $4.49 per compress. We wanted to price ours higher than the lowest cost because we have a superior product, but we wanted to make it affordable to promote repeat users, such as athletes. You know, you're supposed to ice pretty much every time after you're active. So that's how we chose $2.50. We wanted a high enough margin so that we can use a lot of marketing to get our product out there, whether it's, you know, online marketing where you pay by cost per sale, cost per action. As far as distributors and retail stores, for wet packages, distributors ideally take a 30% markup, so that's what we did, and retail stores ideally take 70% markups, so we just went with what would be ideal for distributors and stores because we thought that that would promote good relations and be mutually beneficial. Because we can produce these compresses for so cheap, as you said, with shipping and costs and everything, 34.5 cents, and these are real accurate numbers. We got quotes from people everywhere from Thousand Oaks to China on these different stages. We played some of them against each other and got what we thought were the best deals. So,
thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great.
I recall you mentioning that you were planning on sort of different product design for different body parts and perhaps different product design to work with different individual braces and compresses. Is that accurate? Are you looking at sort of a product line? And if so, have you thought at all about how you secure enough shelf space in the pharmacies?
Yes, we have. In pharmacies, they typically have a few more knee braces than ankle braces and a few more ankle braces than elbow braces. So the next markets that we would extend our product lines to would be compresses that are compatible with ankle and elbow braces. We also plan on coming out with heat compresses as well. What's great about the heat compresses is that athletes can heat as they're warming up using their own brace, which they currently can't do. And we can basically extend the design of our compress to any type of joint, whether it's, you know, shoulder, back, and there's different attachment techniques that we're looking for, as in mainly just you could even put straps around the compress and have that attached to the back, because a lot of people who try to ice their lower back use home remedies that aren't effective, whether they're trying to hold on a bag of peas and it's falling off, or using a makeshift towel to tie it on. It's not effective because these things don't have direct contact with the desired icing part of your body.
Along those lines, it would seem that with the production of additional, or the creation of additional product lines, that you would have a revenue growth acceleration. Yet, looking at your financials, it seems like the revenue growth actually slows, especially towards years 3, 4, and 5. From a percentage standpoint, so can you explain where that comes from? And is
sure.
that perhaps limited by the size of the market?
Here's a first year detailed financial projections. We based our sales off of mainly how many knee braces were sold per month, how many stores did we think we could get our products in, and how fast we thought we could really get our sales going. And then next we have a 3-year financial projections. So really, if you look here, I think it's around month 8 or 9, when you start seeing a lot of accelerated growth in terms of where, what's, how many stores we're getting our products into. And then here we have your 3-year projections. I think what's going to happen is that our growth will start accelerating after 9 months or so. And then once we really get out there and are known, it might not be as fast because we will be expanding the market. Right now, a lot of people don't ice as much as they should because it's inconvenient. So it's going to take a little bit of time for the market to expand, which is what we think will happen once we hit year 3.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And year 4 and 5 are just projections. So.
We design and sell green modular homes. Our value proposition is that we create homes that are far greener than the average home without being any more expensive. Now, this is one of Workshop's design. It's the one that won first place in the Global Green Competition. It is indicative both of the possibilities of modular and of their style. Green Pieces is here to revolutionize the green housing industry by using the efficiencies of modular. Now, what is the impetus for this revolution? Our customers are pained. They are pained with high energy bills, health concerns that come from poor indoor air quality, which result in respiratory problems. They are also pained with the high environmental impacts of buildings during construction and use. Now, while these are all problems that green building can solve, the problem with green building is that it is expensive. Customers want but cannot afford green homes, and Green Pieces has that solution. Green Pieces uses modular construction to reduce the cost of a green home. Now, more customers can afford a green home. Take a look at these two homes. As we all can see, neither of them look like a trailer. Yet, one of them is modular. The one on the right is Workshop's green modular home design. It is currently being built in Pennsylvania for installation in Nantucket. Contrary to what many people believe, modular construction is a superior form of construction. For instance, anticipating the rigors of transportation, a modular home is built to be much stronger than a traditional built home. In addition, it is built in a controlled environment, which means that eliminates the sources of water infiltration and mold. Modular construction is faster, contributes less waste, and delivers a lower price. In addition, the modular factory process further eliminates the environmental impact during the construction phase. Now, how do we further address our customer pains? Green Pieces designs, it drastically reduces the utility bills through using features such as a tight building envelope, intelligent site orientation, and efficient fixtures and appliances. We eliminate the sources of poor indoor air quality through using non-toxic substances as well as green materials. All of these features reduce the environmental impact during the use phase. And that is just our base model. Let me introduce you to the shades of green. We took into account the fact that our customers want to customize their home and achieve varying levels of green. Therefore, they can choose a darker green model, choosing from options such as photovoltaic panels and bamboo flooring. I'm now going to pass it off to Kelly, who will further explain our business.
Thank you, Nicole. Now, this is our business model and a more thorough description of the services that Green Pieces will offer its customers. Green Pieces will design and sell the homes. We will contract out the construction, site work, and landscaping. We will act as a packager of the process. We understand that building or buying a home is a really emotional purchase. Therefore, we will work with the customer to design their home. We'll oversee the construction process and ensure that the quality of the experience is as high as possible for the customers. We will market to both individual home buyers as well as developers. In each case, the end consumer will be the same. This end consumer is in the LoHaS market segment. LoHaS stands for Lifestyles of Health and Sustainability. It's a $209 billion marketplace, $50 billion of which is in green building. It comprises about 16% of the adult U.S. population. This market segment is described by their moral and environmental ethics that drive their purchasing decisions. They tend to be well-educated in the upper to middle income categories. They're also drivers of political and social change. We conducted a nationwide analysis to find our area of greatest opportunity. We looked for the presence of our LoHaS market segment, presence of green building, and areas of fast growth. We'll be starting in the Northeast to take advantage of our designers' name recognition and their contacts. The top black circle shows the service radius from central Pennsylvania, where Workshop currently has two modular prototypes in development. We are in talks right now with a developer in Charlottesville, Virginia. This will enable us to transition into the Southeast, which is where we have found our greatest market opportunity. There are currently no major players in the Southeast, and we believe that the Southeast is ready for this product, and we want to be a first mover in this region. It's important to note we are not the first company to have this idea, and in fact, there are several green modular home builders that are currently in operation. They're located primarily on the West Coast, the most notable being Michelle Kaufman. As we will be starting in the Northeast, our greatest competitor there will be Res4. We will differentiate ourselves from these companies by being more competitively priced. We will take basic green features and combine them with intelligent design, making this available on a mass scale. That being said, we also compete with other home builders. So what are our competitive advantages? In our price range, we compete with traditional home builders, not modular builders. We are able to reach those customers who want to buy a green home but cannot afford them. Compared to green home builders, we compete on price. We offer the same environmental performance but for less money. And as I already stated, with green modular home builders, we also are priced more competitively. Green Pieces comes in at about $170 per square foot. This includes much of the site work. Our competitors in this area, they come in at around $250 per square foot and above, and this often does not include the site work. Now, we've constructed a strong management team that will be guided by our advisory board. This team is well equipped to execute the plans for Green Pieces. Our management team consists of the principal designers and founders of Workshop APD. Both Matt Berman and Andrew Kochin have received worldwide recognition for their global green design win. Their firm has been in operation for almost 10 years and is considered one of the top 50 design firms in New York City. We will be leveraging their design skills for our prototype, but eventually we will become our own separate firm with our own designers. As a soon-to-be TMP graduate and graduate from the Donald Brun School of Environmental Science and Management, I will bring my business skills as well as my environmental expertise to this firm. Our advisory board has decades of experience in their respective fields, and each has been involved in a successful startup. For example, our modular construction expert, Greg Sleditsky, has over 25 years of experience as one of the most sought-after consultants in the field. These are our milestones. I've already mentioned Workshop's success in the Global Green Competition. Earlier this year, Green Pieces won a business plan competition in Washington, D.C. This was put on by the William James Foundation. It was for socially responsible businesses. We also took second place in the Sustainability Prize in this national competition. The rest of this slide shows our plans for future growth as well as our use of funding. We will be incorporating shortly and plan to have our first round of seed funding completed by the fall. This round will be $300,000, which we will use primarily for marketing and product development. We will also use it to build networks with clients, builders, and suppliers and fill the holes of our management team. Our second round of funding will be $1 million, which we will seek from angel investors. This will be used for the completion of a demonstration home. This demonstration home will be used primarily as a prototype to work out the kinks in the design and the construction process, as well as helping establish our brand. The Charlottesville development in Virginia will begin 9 months to a year from now. We also have plans for future expansion. These include expanding geographically, as well as incorporating more services into our business model. Finally, our investors will receive a strong return of 60% after 5 years. Our sales projections reflect our steady ramp-up of our operations as we first build our demonstration homes and then contract with developers. Our income projections show solid profitability. As we do not require a large capital investment to get this going, we will quickly break even and steadily ramp up our income as our sales increase. This is our simplified income statement. We are working on improving our margins up to 30% by years 4 and 5. We will do this through the efficiencies of mass production, as well as leveraging our brand to create competition between modular manufacturers. This will be reflected in our operating profits. In conclusion, we believe that Green Pieces offers real benefits to the environment, to society, and to our investors, and that we have a strong team with the knowledge and the passion to see it through. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice presentation and beautiful home. I wanted to understand a little bit more the relationship with the founders of Workshop APD. So they are currently part of the team and then will be transitioning out or into an advisory role. Can you talk more about that time frame and what the relationship is during that period?
Kelly.
Thanks. Well, first, I'm going to be going to New York as soon as I'm done with school to help work on this project. And both Matt and Andrew will be heavily involved. Matt will be giving 100% of his time initially to it. And as the operations, once it gets its feet and starts running more operationally, Andrew will be more involved at that point. So they will definitely, they'll be making the transition.
And in the near term, you're using Mirror Designs? And is,
yes.
And are you paying licensing fees back to the firm, or is there...
No, it'll be our designs, and then eventually we will have our own architects.
Thank you.
I understand that you're planning to partner with existing modular home manufacturers, and you had them on that chart, which is great because it seems like there's good concentration in your target market, and I expect transportation costs are a big part of this, so that helps there. You know, per your slide, I think it's something you've predicted, but it does. Modular homes don't, and sort of high quality don't necessarily, in one's mind, come hand in hand. You can understand that a designer can design very high quality modular homes, but how have you started to engage with the manufacturers, and have you found ones that are a good match with what you're looking to accomplish?
Kelly.
Thanks. Well, you know, that's one of the challenges that definitely we recognize, that the modular and, you know, high quality. But as is already relevant, which you can see in our competitors' designs, they do beautiful, beautiful homes. And so that's the point of a lot of the demonstration home, is to kind of break this stigma that's associated with poor construction and modular construction. So, you know, that's the point of getting this market hold, making people aware of it. You know, a lot of times you'll see modular homes all over the place, but you don't realize that they're modular. So there's definitely the stigma attached that it's a trailer, but it's definitely not the case. And we recognize that that's something that we have to educate our customers about, and that's something that we are trying to break down with our demonstration homes and getting a market hold.
Have you engaged already with any manufacturing partners?
Yes. Our designers are currently in talks with Avis Homes. They're located in central Pennsylvania, and they're working on the prototype, so they seem very willing to incorporate a lot of the features. That's a difficulty that a lot of people have when they approach a modular manufacturer. Oh, we want to use different materials, but they seem very open and willing to working with us, so that's promising.
Great.
Very nice presentation. One of the points that you mentioned was that against other green modular home builders, that you guys have a significant cost advantage. I believe it was $250 a square foot versus $170. Can you illuminate us or give us a little more insight as to where those cost benefits come from?
Max.
So the cost differences between us and other green modular builders kind of come in two ways. One is they tend to be in expensive areas, and we're planning on targeting outside of large urban centers and outside of California, frankly. It's really expensive. Cost of labor is very high here. When you go to the southeast, the general costs of construction are a lot lower. But the second thing gets to our shades of green, which is they tend to cluster here at the bottom, and they're targeting the rich and the very high-end green home buyer. And we're looking to target at the top somebody who wants just to cut their utility bills down and wants a high-performance home but doesn't necessarily have to have the most expensive materials and doesn't have to generate their own electricity.
And a follow-on question, can you talk a little bit about how you actually go about acquiring customers in your target geography?
Sure. So there's two main customer segments, really. There's direct sales to individuals and then developers. Within this industry, a lot of it's word of mouth. In fact, Workshop APD has never spent a dime on any of their marketing because each customer leads to two or three more customers. So part of our strategy is their name recognition on the East Coast. It's very high. And then each home you build is like a free billboard that you've got sitting there that, until somebody tears it down, is advertising the strengths of your company. So we plan to put in a couple of demonstration homes. So that helps us both work out our processes and get our suppliers in line, but also we get to pick where it goes. So we can, that's part of our $1 million of angel investment, is to actually buy a piece of land and put a home in a high visibility area near our target customers. And the building of a home, you know, takes a little bit of time. You generate some PR buzz and kind of get buzz started that way. But then the second line with developers is a much faster route to generate much larger buzz. So this development in Charlottesville will really move us along in that direction.
Thank you.
Well, very nice presentation. And I'm wondering, are you going to have any warranty on your home to help you sell it to your customers and give them a little assurance that it'll last?
Kelly.
Well, our homes will last just as long as any other built homes. It will be up to code, and you know, like we get the hurricane question a lot and the snow question. So, you know, they will be up to codes. They'll last just as long as a normal home. And we get asked a lot about the LEED certification process. And our homes will be able to be LEED certified. Are you familiar with LEED? Okay. So, you know, the LEED process is very expensive. So we're leaving that up to the customer whether or not they want to make it LEED certified. Whether or not they want to certify it LEED, but yes, it will have a warranty just as long as any other home. So.
And then the other thing that wasn't clear to me, are you going to be the general contractor or are you going to hire the general contractor?
We will hire the general contractor.
Okay. Thank you.